Would-be presidential candidates are responding to the devastating shooting rampage at Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina. Hillary Clinton, who'd left Charleston just hours before the shooting, addressed it yesterday at a campaign event in Las Vegas.
In the days ahead, we will once again ask what led to this terrible tragedy and where we as a nation need to go. In order to make sense of it, we have to be honest. We have to face hard truths about race, violence, guns, and division.
And Jeb Bush canceled a town hall meeting with veterans yesterday that was scheduled to be held in Charleston right near the shooting site. And South Carolina Senator and presidential candidate Lindsey Graham canceled campaign events to travel back to his home state. Friday, we have our weekly roundtable looking at the 2016 race, and it starts on this somber note with Julie Mason, host of The Press Pool on SiriusXM's POTUS channel. Hi, Julie.
Hey, guys.
And Julie, just ask you, how do you think the candidates are handling it? It's early on. They've had slightly different responses. What would you say?
Well, it's tough. A lot of them don't want to talk about race. They just don't want to get into it. Rick Santorum was saying that this was a crime against Christianity. And, you know, over at the White House, we see the president grappling with his own limitations on this. It cuts in a lot of different directions.
And how will they have to handle it going forward? The issue of race and guns. Yesterday, President Obama blamed the shooting partly on easy access to guns. Hillary Clinton expressing similar sentiments, but it seems like they're going to have to, whether they want to or not.
No, I don't think they'd have to at all. Certainly, there's no will within the Republican Party to deal with the gun issue in America at all. They will lament it. They'll talk about terrorism. They won't talk about race. They won't talk about guns. They're just going to completely stay away from it. And who's going to pressure them to do it? Not their constituents. It's tougher for Democrats. You hear Hillary Clinton saying, we have to have a real conversation about this. President Obama called Sandy Hook the worst day of his presidency. Nothing changed.
Yeah. Well, and some of the candidates, we should say, are being more direct. Bernie Sanders of Vermont. Perhaps not surprisingly, he says the Charleston church killings are a tragic reminder of the ugly stain of racism that still taints our nation. And Rand Paul, there's a sickness in our country. It isn't going to be fixed by your government. So flagging some, you know, a position he's long taken about smaller government. But Julie Mason of SiriusXM's POTUS channel, stay right there because we also want to welcome Wesley Lowery, national reporter for The Washington Post. Hi, Wesley.
How are you all doing?
We're good, but of course, just it's such a somber day. And when we spoke last, it was in the midst of that rash of videos showing police use of force on unarmed black men. And at that time, you said you thought we were definitely in a moment in history. You are African-American. You've paid attention to these topics. And you said that this moment might be hard for people to recognize that they're even in it, but history will note it. Do you think that this shooting at Emmanuel AME is connected to that moment?
Certainly. You know, one thing that was striking for me was, and I think Julie makes a really important point about the lack of political will around some of these issues, this being potentially the 14th or 15th time that President Obama has had to address the nation following a shooting incident. But with that said, one thing that was striking to me was here you had the nation's first black president in a year which began with him going to Selma, Alabama, commemorating the 50th anniversary of the Selma to Montgomery March, despite the fact that just a year earlier the Supreme Court had undone a major part of the Voting Rights Act. Mm-hmm. And here you have that same president going to South Carolina, or not going to South Carolina, but speaking on a shooting in South Carolina, and quoting from the eulogy that MLK gave after the Birmingham church bombings in which four girls were killed more than 50 years ago. And so it's this idea of, as we're having this elongated conversation on race, on justice, on policing, and fundamentally trying to answer this question of, you know, how much of our original sin are we done paying penance for? How much work do we still have to do? We see these parallels. We go to Selma earlier this year, and we have a first black president who is showing up and having to call for a renewal of the Voting Rights Act. And now we have a first black president who is having to quote a speech from MLK that was given after four young black girls were killed by a white supremacist bombing, and he's having to quote that speech after nine black church members and ministers were killed by a white, but seemingly a white supremacist shooter. And so it tells us a lot about, one, the moment we're in, and two, how that moment relates to some recent history.
But is it going to be, are any of these issues, guns, race, going to be on the campaign trail?
They will. They already are. And what we're seeing now from in terms of the way many of the candidates are attempting to handle it, one thing I always point to is the fact that in Hillary Clinton's first speech as a candidate, one of the things she discussed was criminal justice and race and law enforcement, which had she launched her campaign a year ago, there's no way that would have been her first speech. That said, what we haven't seen yet is any candidate on either side really begin discussing any of these issues in a way that has an added depth or a difference than what we've always heard. Issues of race, issues of gun control have always been issues in political campaigns, always issues in presidential campaigns. But the idea that it's going to go beyond platitudes or beyond talking points, that's something that's yet to be seen.
Well, what about Nikki Haley, the governor of South Carolina? There had been some talk of putting her on the Republican ticket as vice president. Do you think she'll be judged on how she handles this crisis?
I think she will be. I think she's probably less judged in a way that's a little bit less than some of the political backlash we've seen elsewhere. I mean, going back a year, people were talking about Jay Nixon, the governor of Missouri, as a potential, potential vice presidential nominee. He was trying to float himself as that. People like Claire McCaskill, who certainly have large ambitions, even going to Baltimore, and Stephanie Rawlings Blake, who had large ambitions, and people who have in some ways been humbled by the handling or mishandling of these types of incidents and the impact on their political careers. Nikki Haley's in a very different position. It's different in part because she's the governor of a southern state where she has a very potentially muddy and potentially perilous pathway forward here to discuss these issues at all. She's not someone who can necessarily come out very strongly on one side of this issue or the other. She has to kind of weave a very specific line in a state where the Confederate flag still flies outside the statehouse.
At full mast. So that's a big debate there today. But Wesley Lowery, national reporter for The Washington Post, part of our 2016 panel this week. Julie Mason, host of The Press Pool on Sirius XM's POTUS channel. A lot of other things happened. This was quite a week, actually. And it included Jeb Bush finally officially announcing. Let's listen.
We don't need another president who merely holds the top spot among the pampered elites of Washington. We need a president willing to challenge and disrupt the whole culture in our nation's capital. And I will be that president.
Julie, how did he do this week?
He really exceeded expectations, Robin. He, there'd been such a bad rap on Jeb Bush. He'd given some really flat speeches. He was very dull. He was getting a lot of money, but not a lot of support. There weren't a lot of people who said they were voting for him. He came out. He sounded credible. He sounded real. I'll be really interested to see the polls in the next few weeks to show where he places in this race. Right now, the Republican field looks like sort of a three-way matchup at the top between Jeb Bush, Marco Rubio, and Scott Walker. And I wonder how long that's going to hold.
And we learned a little bit about Jeb Bush's family life this week on Jimmy Fallon. Jimmy Fallon interviewed him on The Tonight Show.
Do you speak English or Spanish when you're at home?
Spanish most of the time. And all the time when she's mad at me.
Julie, this brings up the topic of immigration. Where are we this week? Any developments on the way candidates are talking about immigration?
Well, here's really where there's some very strong distinctions between the candidates. And you look at how George W. Bush did among Hispanic voters when he ran for both his presidencies. He did very well, better than any of his other predecessors. And Jeb Bush is in position to do potentially as well. He's talking about immigration in a non-divisive way. He speaks Spanish. He's got a lot of Spanish language media following him around. He could be very well positioned to pick up that vote if he makes it through the primary.
Yeah, but Wesley Lowery, how is he doing with responding to the Iraq war?
And that's a very potentially perilous issue for Jeb Bush. I mean, it's something that, in part, you look at the way he handled this at the very beginning of the campaign, in fact, before he was officially a candidate, announcing his kind of group of advisors on foreign policy, many of whom were old hands from both his brother's administration or even his father's administration, getting out in front and talking about a little flub, confusing whether or not, given the information he knows now, would he go, would he not go. But in some ways, it's always nice to get one of those gaffes out of the way before you're actually a candidate yet. You want to make your mistakes early, especially when you're someone like Jeb Bush who has so much money in the bank, who's got donors who are going to be with him through the long haul. And so far, especially, you know, it's only been, he's only been in the actual race for about a week. It seems to be not something that's come to the forefront yet, if only because current events have been different, but it's certainly something that he's going to have to be much more polished on than we saw him a few weeks ago. By the time they get to the debate stage and decide, and by the time this field starts to whittle down, we know this is going to be a major issue for his campaign.
Well, we only got about a minute here because something else happened this week. Let me think. Oh, yes. Donald Trump announcing he's running, which was a gift to late night hosts. Let's listen, Jon Stewart.
He is putting me in some kind of comedy hospice. where all I'm getting is just straight morphine.
But Julie, I mean, what does he do anything to the race? Does he shake up the race?
No. He is in a position to embarrass some of the other candidates. I think they ought to all stand up and say, I'm not going to be on the debate stage with this guy.
Really? Really? Yeah. I mean, freedom of speech? No. You say no.
No. He's making a mockery of our elections. Humor in politics is great. Hilarity, craziness, yes. But only on the side, not as the main show.
Well, I will tell you one thing. We will be watching him in the newsroom here. That is for sure. Julie Mason, host of the Press Pool on SiriusXM's POTUS channel, and Wesley Lowery, national reporter for The Washington Post. Thanks to you both.
Thank you.